My problem is, at a time of great crisis with mortgage foreclosures and autos, he says we only have one president at a time. I am afraid that overstates the number of presidents we have.
That's Congressman Barney Frank getting some laughs last week when he questioned the leadership of the Bush administration during this period of transition and suggesting that President-elect Barack Obama needed to speak out more assertively about what needs to be done with the auto bailout negotiations and with righting the faltering economy. What more should Obama be doing? Good morning. I'm Joy Cardine. This is the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. It's 10 past 7 on this Tuesday, December the 9th, a snowy December the 9th. And we will talk about this unusual transition time and wonder if unusual times call for unusual involvement by the president-elect. Our guest is Charles Franklin, a professor of political science at the University of Wisconsin-Madison. He joins us by telephone. Good morning.
Good morning, Joy. Good to be here.
Yeah, thanks for joining us by phone. It was a smarter bet than coming into studio this morning.
Well, the worst thing is I had to come into campus anyway.
Oh, no.
So I lost in both ways. I don't get to see you in the studio.
Yeah, well, I think my neighbors are mad at me because my husband and I were out there shoveling at 3 o'clock in the morning, but, you know, you got to do what you got to do.
At least you didn't ramp up the snowblower, I hope.
No. Just that manual one. You know, what do you think of what Barney Frank had to say, his comments? He certainly has a sense of humor, but he was saying Obama should take a more assertive role in, you know, in fixing the economy during this transition.
Well, I think his Frank's quip catches the problem that we're facing, but doesn't really provide a reasonable solution to it. President Bush is in one of the most unusually impotent positions of a sitting president. His approval rating is so low and has been low for so long that he has very little leverage with public opinion or with policymakers, including his own party on Capitol Hill. But Barack Obama's right. We only have one president at a time. And short of a coup, and I assume Congressman Frank wasn't really proposing that, there's literally nothing Barack Obama can do in an official position until January 20th. So I think everybody has to recognize that and deal with it. The Obama appointments, which have come early and have been impressive to people on both sides of the aisle for the most part, are about the best and most effective thing he can do. Stimulate hope for the future, but really, I would say, not get bogged down in the little details of a debate that's inevitably divisive, but rather look as a unifying and hopeful figure for what's coming in the new year.
Yeah, I heard you pointing out on a local Madison TV station a new Gallup poll showing that most of us are giving Obama high marks.
That's right. That Gallup poll done for USA Today showed 78% approving of Obama's handling of the transition. There's another new one out this morning by CNN putting it at 79%. And those are strikingly high. Now, every incoming president benefits from goodwill between Election Day and Inauguration Day. But these numbers for Obama are running between 10 and 20% higher than other recent presidents during the transition. And I think it partly reflects the difficult position that President Bush is in and the extreme conditions in the country right now. But it also reflects how well orchestrated the Obama transition has been in terms of bringing out, if not consensus people for the cabinet positions, at the very least people that are well-recognized and well-respected for their previous work in government. So I think in that, the 79 or 78% approval is probably well-deserved.
Yeah. But there are those, like Barney Frank, who I believe are suggesting that while, yes, there is just one president at a time, perhaps President-elect Obama could be whispering in some ears. You know, maybe not, you know, at the podium using the pulpit, but twisting some arms to get some of these, for instance, the auto bailout done.
Exactly. Well, I think he's both perhaps, we'll never know, whispered in ears, but he's also been very out up front on Meet the Press this weekend, for example, saying he favored a bailout of the auto industry, but one with restrictions and one with accountability and so on. And so I don't think he's been particularly shy about presenting his broad view of what the solutions might be. What he has not done is come out and backed a specific legislative proposal in detail. And again, I think had he done that, or if he were to do that, he'd probably find that there's a gap between being well-received when you're urging broad principles and the difficulty that comes from not having the leverage of the office of president and yet trying to play something of that role.
We are talking with Charles Franklin, professor of political science at the University of Wisconsin-Madison, about the transition going on right now between the Bush administration and the upcoming Obama administration. President-elect Barack Obama gets some high marks for his handling of the transition and his choices for cabinet in a couple of different polls out recently. Do you give President-elect Obama high marks for how he's handling this transition? Or do you agree with Congressman Barney Frank, who was hoping that President-elect Obama would speak out more assertively about what needs to be done regarding the economy, the auto bailout, the financial systems bailout? 1-800-642-1234. We welcome your ratings and your questions for our guest. 1-800-642-1234, or send an email to talk@WPR.org. I'm Joy Cardine. This is the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. Good to have you with us on the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. It's coming up on 18 minutes past 7 o'clock on this Tuesday, December the 9th. Coming up a little later this hour at about 10:02, we'll be welcoming in the former CEO of American Motors Corporation, who also worked for Ford and Chrysler and is now with the University of Michigan as a professor of management and organizations. Gerald Myers will join us for about 10 minutes or so at the top of the hour to talk about the latest in the auto bailout. The Associated Press is reporting that Democratic lawmakers are close to a deal with the White House on a $15 billion bailout for U.S. automakers. But even with some oversight and restrictions, backers say it will be a challenge to win an estimated 15 Republican votes needed to secure passage. So we'll talk about the latest on the auto bailout coming up a little later this hour. Right now we're talking about the Obama transition and the thought of having one president at a time. Do we need a President Obama to step in earlier? Charles Franklin, our guest professor of political science at the University of Wisconsin-Madison, our guest. Our number, if you have a thought or a question on how this transition is going, 1-800-642-1234, or send an email to talk@WPR.org. So, Professor Franklin, have we ever faced this type of situation in the past where we had an outgoing administration with such poor numbers and such a challenging world situation with the new president coming in?
Well, Herbert Hoover and Franklin Roosevelt come to mind.
Mm-hmm.
And for a little perspective, remember in those days, the new president didn't take office until March.
It
was a much longer transition during that time. And in fact, going back that far, Roosevelt was criticized for not taking an active role during that period. In fact, apparently Hoover wanted him more involved, and Roosevelt didn't want to be involved as not a president and yet joined at the hip with a very unpopular incumbent. But if we go back to more recent years, the transition, for example, from Clinton to Bush was not during a time of economic crisis. From Bush to Clinton, the elder Bush to Clinton. Again, we were coming out of a recession, but not this kind of crisis. I think you could go back to the end of the Carter administration for the more recent example. The inflation was very high, unemployment was high, the Iranians were still holding hostages. But President-elect Reagan did not take a very active role during that transition period, certainly not to the extent that the current circumstances have. I think part of the reason was that while the Carter crisis or economic situation was very poor, it didn't have the same imminent crisis characteristics that this one does. This one is, the recession has been coming on, we know, for more than a year now, but the real crisis that hit in mid-September and the events since it, I think, have given a greater sense of urgency than I believe we can think of for any transition period really since the Depression.
Yeah, and of course, then that's added to with the urgency we hear from the automakers, especially GM, saying if we don't get this these loans, this bailout money, GM says we might go out of business or have to go bankrupt by the end of the year.
Which is very attention-getting. Mm-hmm. It's a very serious situation. And yet the public remains very divided on this. And here is another area where I think the vacuum created by President Bush's lack of leadership is particularly important. A new CBS poll yesterday showed opinion on the bailout split 45-44. An ABC poll earlier in the week showed a larger majority opposed to the bailout. And when we go back to September to the original $700 billion that Secretary Paulson asked for, the public largely opposed that. And so we're in a peculiar situation where the economic team in Washington, the Secretary of Treasury, the Federal Reserve leader, and so on, Ben Bernanke, are all in agreement that we face such dire financial circumstances and repercussions that we have to take these extraordinary measures. And yet public opinion really has not been rallied behind that, whether it was for the banks originally or now for the automakers. This is an area where a popular president, or even a moderately popular president, could rally support behind a position if he or she chose to do so. But President Bush both has been lukewarm on the auto industry case, and President-elect Obama, while supportive, has not given the huge effort that Barney Frank seems to want to try to rally that opinion. So we really are in a bit of a vacuum right now, even with Obama being able to make some movement. But the public, as long as the public doesn't become unified behind these very large budget efforts, I think members of Congress are going to find it very hard to unify. And the members of the opposition, mostly Republicans right now, can be justifiably encouraged that in their opposition, they're speaking to at least half the public that agrees with them.
Let's take a call. Pat in Chippewa Falls is with us. Hi, Pat. You're on the air.
Hi, thank you, as always, for your excellent programming and your thoughtful speakers. I hear a little bit of a accent from Arkansas with your current speaker.
The right letter of the alphabet, but a little further east. I grew up in Alabama.
Okay.
But thank
anyway,
you, Pat,
what
for
I
noticing.
Wanted to say is I think Barack Obama is doing an excellent job of respecting our sitting president, and that's very important in terms of our progress as a country. Anything less would be more damaging to our country at this point, and we cannot afford any more damage at this point. Secondly, I think he also is trying to represent all Americans, which I think every elected official always needs to remember, regardless of who put them in office, is at that point they do represent all Americans. And I'll take my comments off the air.
Yeah, absolutely. What about, he's showing respect for our sitting president, Charles Franklin?
Well, I think that's right. And incoming presidents suddenly discover the shoe will soon be on the other foot, so I think maybe they moderate a little bit. But I like Pat's second point especially, because this is a moment where the public is surprisingly unified, if not on these policy issues, but unified in their support of their hopes, at least, for the incoming administration. That 79% approval rating is phenomenally high of unification. I think also the idea that these issues are big enough that they can unite partisans in seeking solutions is there. But the problematic part is in the details. And again, the opposition that's actually coming from the two Alabama senators to the auto bailout can be seen as partisan, but I think it can also be seen as reflecting real philosophical differences about what happens when the government props up a failed industry rather than letting the market system take over. And the problem, of course, is the gigantic job loss in the auto industry and in all of the affiliated industries around it, because here you're really choosing between two bads. One is a government-run auto industry seems unlikely to be more efficient than the current auto industry, but at the same time, the kinds of job losses and economic impacts of even one of the big three failing, let alone two, is the kind of economic disruption that could really drive the economy down for a very long time.
You know, I did hear some commentators mentioning that Treasury Secretary Paulson, for example, actually does need more input from the Obama administration on what to do with the remaining $350 billion that's left from the $700 billion financial services bailout money, that because whatever decisions Paulson would make now would carry over into the next administration. Is that, I mean, is there anything wrong with the Obama team saying, hey, do this with that money?
I think some input is probably likely, at the very least on the informal side. I think there's also competing interests here. Secretary Paulson would like to move quickly in whatever direction he's deciding to move in this week. But the Obama administration wouldn't mind having most of that $350 billion for them to spend as they see fit in 2 months. So I think there's a little bit of a competing interest here, that whatever the Obama team would like to do with the money, I think they're in no position to dictate to Secretary Paulson. And the other side, of course, is even if you did exactly the same thing, it might be more effective with the new economic team in January that the public has more hope in, rather than a team that may have performed as well or maybe as poorly as possible in this last few months, but one whose record has failed to produce a clear solution. So I think there is some political advantage in waiting for a while, even if to spend that money, but there are competing interests between the outgoing and the incoming administration on it.
We just have a minute before news time, Professor Franklin, then maybe we can talk more about this. Is there any public opinion polls on President-elect Obama's stimulus plan to do this major infrastructure projects New Deal?
I don't think there's been time to address the details of what he set out over the weekend when he first clearly mentioned an infrastructure investment equal to the or greater than the interstate highway system, as he put it. But I think, in the broad outlines, there will be support for an economic stimulus plan. Where we're likely to run into problems is in the details. I think, for one thing, one issue is how much of this will involve construction that environmentalists may have problems with. A wholesale ripping up of the land won't be appreciated, but exactly what does Obama have in mind for this kind of reconstruction?
We will check news from National Public Radio and Wisconsin Public Radio, and then we'll be back talking with Charles Franklin, professor of political science at UW-Madison. I'm Joy Cardine. This is the Ideas Network. This is the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. I'm Joy Cardine at 7:36 on this Tuesday morning, December the 9th. Our guest is Charles Franklin, a political science professor at UW-Madison, and we are talking about the transition period that we are in right now. President-elect Barack Obama becomes President Obama on January 20th of next year. Until then, he says, President Bush is in charge, and there can only be one president at a time. But some are suggesting President-elect Obama take a more assertive role in speaking out on the economy and specifically what needs to be done regarding the auto bailout proposal. We wonder what you want to hear from him and whether you think President-elect Barack Obama is doing a good job during this transition period. 1-800-642-1234 or send an email to talk@WPR.org. We will be talking more about the auto bailout proposal coming up in about 10-15 minutes or so when we welcome in the former CEO of American Motors Corporation. We'll get his take on the latest form of the auto bailout. And you know what, Professor Franklin, I want to get your take on this too. We have the White House and congressional leaders negotiating the details of this proposal. It is a $15 billion government rescue, less than what the automakers were asking for. They were asking for $34 billion, I believe. What do you think the chances are here of this coming to fruition?
I think the 15 is probably likely to go through in that it represents a short-term compromise to get the automakers through the end of the year and until the new administration takes over, and also until the Democrats increase their majority in Congress starting in early January. I think the difficulties of reaching a consensus have been amplified by President Bush's reservations about a large bailout. And so as a compromise, the idea of $15 billion to solve the immediate crisis, but not to set up a real solution to the long-term problem, it's probably a workable compromise under the circumstances.
Yeah, backers, though, are still saying it will be a challenge to win the estimated 15 Republican votes needed to secure passage, even with the White House going along with it?
I think that is a difficult issue, and we're not yet sure whether Republican opposition will be strong enough, intense enough to, for example, filibuster this in the Senate. But the key issue is at what point do lawmakers see it as something where even if they're opposed to it, it's better to vote for it. We really saw that with the financial bailout of Wall Street in September, where initially Republicans voted down the bailout bill, but came back a few days later to pass it as it became overwhelmingly clear what the ramifications were. Here, I think with the auto industry, there's a little bit of difference in that representatives from states with little or no auto industry may be more willing to vote against a bailout. On the other hand, every one of those members has American auto dealers in their states, if not manufacturing, and those dealers are certainly going to have a role to play in this as well.
Yeah. The House Speaker, Nancy Pelosi, in the New York Times today, saying that she hopes President Bush's appointee, or car czar, as the position has come to be known, would not need to be replaced by President-elect Obama, raising the prospect that the outgoing and incoming administrations would cooperate in selecting someone. So there's some cooperation, perhaps.
Well, I think that's entirely possible. The exact definition of this position is yet to be ironed out. I think Karzar has an implication that this is going to be someone who effectively becomes the chief executive of the car companies. That role could be either more expansive or it could be more constrained to focus entirely on the economic issues. If it's the latter, then I think they might agree on a technocrat to oversee it. If it's someone who's going to exert more policy-making authority, then I think the difficulty of agreeing between the two administrations may be more difficult. But to appoint someone and then replace them in short order carries its own risks. So I think the two would presumably like to agree on that. Yeah. I think this is also one of the areas that's difficult. The idea that a government appointee can come in and somehow solve the problems that the executives and the unions and the car companies have been unable to resolve for decades seems pretty unlikely, and I think that heightens the skepticism of voters and some members of Congress about a large auto bailout.
Well, yeah, and indeed, President Bush expressed that skepticism too by saying we don't want to be having to devote more good money after spending bad.
Barack Obama himself said the same thing on Meet the Press this weekend that he didn't want to go into this and then have the companies come back and. A few months and say, well, we spent that $35 billion. We need more. And I think this is really a nightmare scenario for the new administration. The new administration would like to put in policies which move towards a solution to these issues. And the last thing Barack Obama wants to be is responsible for a second or a third auto industry bailout, especially one that in the end turns out not to be successful. So we really come back to the issues of potential bankruptcy and the idea of using bankruptcy law to structure the auto industry's reformation of its contracts and of its practices and so on, rather than trying to effectively do that same restructuring but without the bankruptcy protections. And I think that's the second level of negotiation that's going on here. Could a bankrupt General Motors, for example, survive and reemerge as a restructured company? We have examples of airlines that have practically every airline has been bankrupt in the last 10 years, and most have emerged from that. And what's more, the public continued to fly United Airlines when it was bankrupt or Northwest when it was bankrupt. And so I think there is a precedent there. With the auto industry, there's a lot of talk of who would buy a car from a bankrupt automaker. But I think at least the airline example is one that maybe the brand name will sustain a company during that restructuring, especially if it's understood that the company is going to restructure and then emerge from bankruptcy. But this is a huge problem for policymakers. It's a huge problem for the industry itself to figure out how to deal with this.
Yeah, and while you mentioned that public opinion polls put the public against both the Wall Street bailout and the auto bailout, there are some who are criticizing the Republicans in particular for voting for bailing out Wall Street, but then balking at bailing out, the blue collar auto worker. Is there any merit to that?
Absolutely, and I think in fact that is one of the elements of this, and it's not just Republicans; it's Democrats who are being accused of this as well. More Republicans voted against the initial bailout. Because it reflects the public sense that these bailouts are not going to homeowners who are being foreclosed on. They're not going to the mom-and-pop shop on Main Street. And so there's a fundamental inequity in asking the broad public to pay for financial solutions to problems when their own financial solutions are not being met. The other aspect is the inequity of homeowners who are meeting their mortgages being required to bail out people that made unwise economic decisions in some of their mortgages. And so it's a confrontation between the large economic system impacts that threaten the economy for all of us versus the individual injustice of you and me making extra tax payments and our children and grandchildren making those payments to pay for the deficits that we're going to run in order to bail out these individual homeowners, the banks and their mortgages, now the auto industry. And I think legitimately people wonder, once you start down this road, where do you draw the line? Which constituency is going to be next in line asking for government money?
Yeah, I know we have to let you go in just a moment here, but let me close with an email from Mark in Spring Green. I find it troubling that people are so casually discussing extra constitutional measures like shifting power to a president-elect. As citizens, we should be holding tight to the constitutional principles in times like these when we are being governed by fear and panic instead of deliberation. So
I think that's a wise head. And I think, you know, realistically, Barney Frank is good at hyperbole and a good line. But no one is seriously contemplating that there be a transition of power. There are serious considerations of Obama's role and how outspoken he should be in it and how much Congress should listen to him. So I do think that there's an element of truth to his comment that we should be more respectful of this. But I also think we have to put some of it in the category of hyperbole rather than really serious calls for a change. Perhaps it does raise the question of whether it's wise for a country to put in such a long wait between one government and the next. In Great Britain, if a prime minister loses an election, they're out of 10 Downing Street the next day. Of course, in our case, it takes a lot more time to assemble a government.
Absolutely.
In the British case, that's not the situation because of the form of government and shadow cabinet.
Well, maybe that will be another discussion another day. Thanks a lot for being with
us.
Charles Franklin, professor of political science at the University of Wisconsin-Madison. Coming up after we check weather, we will get another take on the latest on the auto bailout proposal. We will talk with the former CEO of American Motors after this weather break. You're listening to the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. I'm Joy Cardine. We will get the reaction of the former CEO of the American Motors Corporation on the latest proposal to loan money to the big three automakers. According to The Wire, there still are some negotiations going on between Congress and the White House, but Democratic lawmakers say they are close to a deal with the White House on a $15 billion bailout for U.S. automakers. But even with the oversight and restrictions, backers say that there could be a challenge winning the estimated 15 Republican votes needed to secure passage. So what do you think of the potential agreement between the White House and Congress to loan the big three some money, but it would be less money than originally asked for? The CEOs wanted $34 million. This is sort of an emergency holdover for the now until the end of the year of $15 billion. 1-800-642-1234 or send an email to talk@wpr.org. Our guest is Gerald Myers, a professor of management and organization at the University of Michigan's School of Business. He was the former CEO of American Motors Corporation, and he worked for Ford and Chrysler, too. He joins us by telephone. Good morning.
Morning, Joy. First, I want to say hello to all my friends over there in Wisconsin.
And you did you do stuff in Kenosha when American Motors was there?
Yeah, I was chairman and CEO of American Motors for about 15 years when American Motors was up and running and making money.
Yeah, and American Motors is no more, though. Do you think the same's going to happen to one of the other big three?
Well, first I want to say American Motors is not dead. It's a part of the Chrysler Corporation.
True.
It was bought by Chrysler, and the vehicles and passenger cars are not on the for sale today. Jeeps are very much are and are a big part of the Chrysler earnings.
True. Yeah. So, what do you think of this this potential agreement between the White House and Congress?
Well, it's what you would expect when you go to Washington with your hand out. You can expect that it will get slapped many times, and you'll pay a high price for whatever you get. And that's going to happen here too if this deal gets approved by the Senate.
Yeah. Well, why do you think giving the companies bailout money or these loans would be a bad idea?
Well, it is a bad idea from many points of view. The idea of having the government, the federal government in this case, to a large extent, having the federal government get into the business of designing and building and tooling and selling cars, is something that the government is not very well equipped to do.
Yeah. What about the Car Czar? Would he or she be equipped to do that?
Who is that?
The Car Czar. They're saying having somebody appointed to kind of oversee giving out the money and restructuring.
Yeah, well, anybody that gets appointed as the Czar will be overseeing what the auto companies are doing.
Mm-hmm.
And in all likelihood wouldn't be the originator of great and good ideas, but would be just a protection device for this, for the potential shareholders. And I would not expect that any great zoom kind of automobile or truck would come forward because there's a government official sitting in the corner office.
What about, though, GM specifically saying it could run out of money by the end of the year without a loan? Wouldn't that be equally as bad?
Well, running out of money any time is a bad idea. I for one, don't believe that when the clock strikes 12 on January 1st or December 31st, that suddenly General Motors is bankrupt. It's just a strange thing to me to find that the auto companies are saying, if one of us dies, we all die. That's not credible. And, you know, they've even stretched it over to the supplier base that says that if a major supplier goes to Chapter 11, why, that's the end of the automobile industry and 2 million people will be out of work. I think those are great overstatements of what the results would be if one of them ran into trouble and had to economize suddenly.
Really? So you don't think the statements that people would be less likely to buy a GM vehicle if GM went bankrupt, that's not true?
Well, I think if it's put that way, there will be a reticence, of course, on the part of people to buy automobiles from whatever company says it's going bankrupt. I think General Motors is right in getting that out on the table. But I don't think that's the end of American automobiles forever and ever, as this whirlpool of excitement is built in Washington to lead you to believe.
Yeah. So, though, if confidence is lost in one or more of the big three, and car sales continue to plummet and money continues to be lost, then doesn't that mean they go out of business and could cost millions of jobs?
Question: there would be dislocation, but I'm not looking toward, and I don't imagine any thinking person is looking toward the U.S. automobile suddenly with a blink of the eye is out of business on January 2. I just don't think that's true.
Yeah.
I think that if there's a good case that can be made that there's too much capacity, United States production capacity for automobiles at the present time, and it wouldn't be a bad thing at all to eliminate 1.5 million or 2 million vehicles a year capacity so that there would be more competition in the United States among the U.S. producers. So it's not all a bad idea to see the U.S. Makers shrink some so that they will compete on a more even basis with the Asian makers.
Let's take a call for you. Peter in Madison. Hi, Peter. You're on the air.
Hello. It's so nice to talk to you.
Hi.
Hi. I grew up in Kenosha, basically in the shadow of your plant, and in 1985, you provided me with a Renault Encore for under $9,000 that got 40 miles per gallon. Thank you.
Sure.
Price aside, why can't we expect the big three car companies to accomplish this sort of mileage in at least one model per car company today as part of the bailout?
Well, you were broken up a bit. I couldn't quite hear the question.
He wanted to know why. Go ahead.
Sure. Aside from the price, why can't we expect the big three car companies to accomplish this sort of mileage in at least one model per car company today?
Yeah, well, I think you should expect it, and I think you're going to get it. As long as gasoline is at the $4 price, plus or minus, as it has been over the last few months.
Boom.
But,
not
you know,
anymore,
suddenly
though.
Now we find gasoline. Here it is in Michigan. Gasoline is down to it's $1.49 a gallon here.
Right. It's
and so there's a great deal of confusion about what the public really wants. The auto companies, I can assure you, are trying to give the public what it wants, because that's how they make money. But the public is so confused on in the price of oil, it doesn't know what it wants, and for a while it stops buying trucks and Jeeps, and it'll buy only small cars. And what do you know? Here we are in Michigan now. People aren't buying small cars anymore. They're buying trucks again.
Oh, no.
Isn't that ironic?
We only have about a minute to go with you, Professor Myers. What is it that you want to see happen when it comes to the automotive industry and you know, attempts to help it out?
Well, I'm a free market type, and therefore you can classify me as someone who's in favor of let the market work its way. And let the winners and losers be chosen by the buyers of vehicles. And I think that if the big so-called big three, now called the Detroit Three, can't produce the vehicles that the public wants, then shame on them. And they'll lose volume accordingly. On the other hand, if they step up to it and build cars that the public wants, and such as your last caller asked for, things will smooth out. And we'll have a level set of automobile production which will be sustainable.
Well, we appreciate your time. Thank you so much for being with us.
You're welcome.
Gerald Myers, Professor of Management and Organizations at the University of Michigan's Roth School of Business, former CEO of American Motors Corporation. He also worked for Ford and Chrysler. I'm Joy Cardine. Thanks to Rob Ferret for producing the hour and to Bill Martins and Cynthia Schuster for on-air production and direction. This is the Ideas Network.